Shalom Aleichem, or Assalamu Alaikum if you speak Arabic. Oh, good, very good. You know, I enjoyed listening to Mr. Bauer. There was many issues that he discussed that I agree with. Also, there were some issues about marriage and about this country, polygamy. I believe God intended right from the beginning that we marry one. So that's why he gave Adam, to, you know, gave Eve to Adam. So it was Adam and Eve, and it wasn't Adam and Steve. So that should solve all the problem. And I always like to joke with my friend David. I said, David, thank God I don't see you attractive. And as long as I don't see you attractive, I don't think we have a problem, you know. So what is it, the hair? I said, yeah. I don't like hairy beings. Doesn't seem attractive to me. Even if you're bald, it still doesn't seem attractive to me. I think it's natural to be attracted to the opposite sex. And that's the way God made it. I can't understand how the world can be so disgusting. There's no other word to it. Yuck is the word for it. And as I agree with Mr. Bauer that it starts at the home. I understand totally well what he says when he says you repeat to your kids these things. And it starts at the home. You teach it to your kids. My son Teddy has a problem. He goes to school. And I've taught him, I think I taught him well, and he fights in the school. And, you know, we live in California, and he has a real rough time with the teachers out there. He wants to start a Republican party in the school. And all these kinds of things. His teacher, Mr. Gross, tells him that, Ted, if you keep on going talking the way you talk, I guarantee you, you'll never get a job. And my son, he's a 14-year-old kid. He says, funny you say that, Mr. Gross. My dad talks the same way I do, and he's got a job. He says, oh, yeah, I've been checking your dad on the internet. He makes a lot of money what he's doing. He says, well, thank God. That's why we have a nice home. And he's kind of jealous of my son. So my son sends him an email at the end of the school. It says, dear Mr. Gross, I wanted to thank you, environmentalists, for not allowing more building in our area. It seems that there's not enough houses in Northern California. And our house right here by the school is almost worth $1 million. Thank you for helping my father to be a great capitalist. He said, Dad, I never got a reply. So many stories to tell, but we try to make replicas of ourselves. Why not? We ought to be jealous for our kids and our nation. And I agree with Mr. Bauer that I have hope for this nation. And I know many students of the Bible think that America will be part of the Antichrist system, that America will fall apart. That America will just go down the drain. I don't believe so. I think God has his hand on this nation. And if America goes down the tube, then guess I have a question. Who is going to be the nation that will strike the kingdom of the Antichrist? Because it's very clear in the Bible, many places in the Bible, that it says that nations from the ends of the earth will come to destroy this Babylon. So if there are nations from the ends of this earth in regards to the Middle East, I think America will be a good candidate. And in Micah 5, the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem. Thou art Bethlehem Ephratah, although you are the least from the clans of Judah, yet out of you comes to the one to be ruler over Israel. But yet we never continue the verses. It talks about the second coming of the Messiah, and it says, and then I will, the unity of God, we will raise against him, this Antichrist, seven shepherds and eight princely men, and they will strike the land of Assyria, the Assyrian, the Nimrod, that Antichrist. So there are Bowers in the Bible, you know. God will raise these leaders that they will strike the Antichrist. They will strike that evil system that comes in the end. So I can show you many places in the Bible where I disagree that, we be so negative that this country is going to go down the tubes. I think the sad things that happens in America are good. Rejoice when you see these things, because it's through these things that we are waking up. If Shiloh doesn't die, if people are not sacrificed, if we don't die as martyrs, then how else are the other Christians in this country will wake up to understand and smell the hummus, as I always say. If you don't know what hummus is, talk to me after the lecture. I'll give you a good recipe. You know, we need some persecution to wake us up. And indeed, we see this persecution. Don't forget, it was that little Esther, that little evangelical Christian movement that voted in the Republican Party. It was us. And for a change, we finally woke up. And we did something about it. The president is not perfect. Yes, he does pressure Israel here and there. And in fact, I disagree with the president for forcing Israel to divide the land. I don't agree that it was Sharon kind of soul-heartedly is going on a limb. I think Sharon's hand is twisted. I think the bulldozer is still a bulldozer, but he's forced in a corner. And in fact, the Bible clearly says that God will judge the goyim, the nations. He will not judge Israel. And that is clearly in Joel chapter 2 and 3. For God will come down himself to judge the nations, for they have scattered my people and they have divided up my land. So, yes, we should stand with this country, but the blessings of this nation, the blessings of America, will cease to exist if we, the believers in this country, don't bless the state of Israel. This is what I believe firmly from looking at the Bible. But how did I reach to this conviction? How did I reach to this conclusion? What does, you know, what is the journey of a terrorist who came to this nation, in fact, intending to destroy you? Not just by myself, but other family members. I know Mr. Bauer was talking about the immigration issue and people jumping in to the borders. I know my cousin Iyad, when he came to this country, he was a student and he got his citizenship by falsification. He went and got a document that says he was a Mexican farm worker. And by that document, he was able to obtain a citizenship. He has a business of manufacturing passports, United States passports, all kinds of passports, and sells them in the market. And he's a pro-terrorist. He, in fact, embezzled this nation with hundreds of thousands and close to millions of dollars in credit card fraud, and he calls it financial terrorism. And it's not just regular terrorism that goes in this nation, but financial terrorism as well, where they try to deplete this nation and destroy this nation from its fabric. And now he lives in Israel, and he comes back and forth, I guess, and he lives in separate cars and all kinds of things. Another cousin of mine decided to ram his taxi cab in Chicago into a synagogue, attempting to die in the process of killing Jews. What caused him to do that? Another cousin of mine, Ra'ed went from our village in Beit Sahur and went to Ben Yehuda Street in his attempt to plant a bomb in Ben Yehuda Street to kill Jews in order to please his God Allah. And in the process, the Israelis shot my cousin Ra'ed and killed him. And of course, the United Nations would say that Israelis kill Palestinian children. What do you expect the Israelis to do? Do you expect them to ask my cousin Ra'ed with his friends, his suicide bombing friends, to stop the car and ask him to roll down his window? Sir, do you have a driver's license? Can you step out of the car? You have a right to remain silent. You have a right for a Jewish lawyer. And here's a couple of shekels so you can make a phone call. Chick, kaboom. And there everybody goes. It is a country that is living in terror. The people in Kiryat Arba who take the regular bus from Kiryat Arba to their community have bars and wire and mesh all around the bus and bulletproof glass. And they get stoned every day in that bus stop. And we're not talking about little pebbles, but we're talking about big boulders of rocks that flies on that bus every day as these poor Jewish people that are trying to go to their community, go home. Imagine you live in this nation. And you walk out of here and there's Muslim fundamentalists throwing stones at your bus, but you can't do nothing about it because this country is such a democratic country and there's a freedom of stoning. And, you know, you live in terror every day. You're a small minority. The beauty of a nation, my friends, is the treatment of these minorities. The beauty of a nation is how this nation treats the blacks, how it treats Orientals, and how it treats people who come to this nation. And indeed, this country has been a beacon to all these people that came here. But yet, unfortunately, some of us didn't learn your freedom and is not interested in your faith and is not interested in your ideology and is not interested to conform with your system, but is interested in changing your system in order to destroy you within. That was us, the Islamists that came to this country to destroy it. That was me. But what made me? Let me tell you, maybe I start from the beginning like a psychologist. You know, you lie down and you start from the age of two. And indeed, I remember from the age of two, because I remember when I was circumcised, you know, I was in Saudi Arabia. And my mother said, how could you remember that? I even described the color of the bottle of the alcohol they used when the guy, I remember I described his garbs. I described where was the crib in the room. And she says, how do you remember that? You were 2 years old. I says, no boy can forget when he was circumcised. It was horrifying. So I remember. But I don't remember when I was born, of course. My mother, who was an American, met my father in Humboldt State University in the 50s. She was a nominal Christian, and that's the danger of being a nominal Christian, my friends. She was unaware of what Islam is about or what is it to be a Muslim. She fell in love with a Prince Charming Arab, and my father, I guess, wooed her into falling in love with him. And she converted to Islam, married my father, who was a Jordanian, a Palestinian. And the reason I say Jordanian, because at his time there was no Palestine. She had my brother and my sister in Eureka. Her grandfather was the mayor of Eureka. He was good friends with the president of the United States, and he was also good friends with Winston Churchill. And I didn't know that much about my American side of my family. She was 9 months pregnant and in the process of visiting my Arab grandmother, ailing grandmother in Bethlehem. She gave birth the first day she arrived to Bethlehem in the upper room of my grandfather's house. No, I am not the one, but there is another who will come after me. Him you shall obey. I am nothing but a sinner and a terrorist. This is why I say confession is the beginning of healing. And today, I confess that I was a Palestinian terrorist. And without confession, remember, there's no healing. You do not see any confession in the Middle East. Where is it? Where is the confession of Mahmoud Abbas that he wrote his thesis that the Holocaust never existed? It doesn't exist. Has there been any confession in the Arab world for 850,000 Jews thrown out of the land of the Muslim world? It does not exist. And if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. You know, you can't believe it. My grandfather, from my father's side, he was the chieftain of the village of Beit Sahur, Bethlehem. He was also good friends with the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Hajj Amin al-Husseini. Some of you don't know who Hajj Amin al-Husseini is. Let me remind you. He was an Islamist. He was called the Führer of the Muslim world. He used to come to our home, and my grandfather would kill sheep and goat, that was customary at that time, and make feasts for Hajj Amin al-Husseini, the Führer of the Muslim world. Hajj Amin al-Husseini, you can see his photo on the eve of the final solution to the Jewish problem. You can see his photo there conspiring with Hitler, an Islamist fundamentalist who was there, who conspired in Auschwitz, who reprimanded the Nazis for not expediting the destruction of all the Jews. Don't tell me that Islam was not involved in Nazism. Indeed it was. Hajj Amin al-Husseini was the founder of the Nazi Khanzar SS troops. Let's not forget that the Nazi war machine was consisted of 8 different divisions, one of which was an Islamist division, the Nazi SS Truppen, and I can show you pictures of them worshipping Muslim style. And indeed, they burned countless of synagogue and churches and killed thousands of Christians and Jews all over in Europe, in Eastern Europe. Hajj Amin al-Husseini urged the Hungarian Prime Minister of Foreign Affairs not to allow 500,000 Jews to go to Eretz Israel, all of which perished in the ovens, 500,000 of them. No thanks to my grandfather's friend, Hajj Amin al-Husseini. 1/12 of the Holocaust was the responsibility of this man, but very few talk about it. It was Hajj Amin al-Husseini who orchestrated the killing of the Jews in Hebron. in 1921 or 29. I don't remember the exact date, but it was the 20s. And this was way before the so-called occupation. Indeed, they tell you in the media that the reason Palestinians kill Jews is because of the occupation. Let me tell you, they were killing Jews way before the occupation and way before this whole issue in the 16th century, 17th century, 18th century. Heck, it was in the 7th century. Muhammad himself killed Jews. Holocaust of Jews existed long time ago. The second oldest profession in history, my friends, always was and still is anti-Semitism. I don't have to tell you what the first profession is. My first memory, my first recollection was a child growing up in that land was in Jericho. In Jericho, here my mother started to realize when she first moved into that land that she couldn't leave. She wanted to use her return ticket to go back to America, you know. And she said, darn it, I'm an American. It didn't work. Let me tell you what happened to Americans, American women specifically, when they marry a Muslim, when they marry out of their faith, and they have children who become Muslims automatically. If your granddaughter or if your daughter marries a Muslim, I guarantee you, they're dominant. You're not going to raise Christian children. The children will be Muslim. My sister had to marry a Muslim, of course. So my father wanted to stay there, so in case my sister falls in love, she falls in love with a Muslim. If my sister married a non-Muslim, it was my duty as a brother to slit her throat. And guess what? I would have done it literally. That's how I grew up and that's how we were raised. My mother started realizing very quickly that this world called Islam is like the Hotel California. She left California to enter into the Hotel California. And if you don't know the story, the song of the Hotel California, you can check in, but you can't check out. The only way she could check out was in a coffin. That was the way it was. She learned very quickly what it is to enter into the gates of Islam. She wanted to go back to her Christian faith, and she didn't know how. Nobody would witness to her, of course, because there's no evangelists. Eventually, an evangelist from Texas came and saw this poor American. My mother was held against her will for 35 years, attempting to escape and go back home to America to her parents. Her parents couldn't rescue her. United States Council couldn't, Consul General in Jerusalem. They came over in the Six-Day War to rescue her. They couldn't get her out. Because in 55 Muslim states, my friends, not one of these countries is signatory to the Hague Convention. Which means if your daughter, your granddaughter, or if you have children overseas in a Muslim country with a Muslim, you cannot do nothing about it. And you can try, but I'm an American, and let me tell you what happened to my mother when she tried that one time. She had walked in the backgammon game, drinking kahwa, coffee, with my uncles and grandfather and everybody else and the friends living in two rooms. Of course, there was an outhouse. And she wasn't used to this kind of lifestyle with my uncles, with their wives and their kids and grandpa and everybody else, above 20, 30 people in two rooms. She got disgusted with the lifestyle. She wanted to go to America. So she walked into the situation. She said, darn it, I'm an American. And she carried the backgammon and tossed it in the ground. You would think that my father would say, oh, I'm sorry, darling, like here in America, and maybe sleep at the couch that night. But that's not the case. My cousin quickly ran over, brought a hammer, gave it to my father, and he blundered my mother in the head, opened her skull open, and she was bleeding all over the place. I remember at a very young age having to hold my mother's hand and take her to the local church so the nuns, the Catholic nuns there, sewed her head shut. That was the story of an American woman. I urge you to watch that movie, Not Without My Daughter, by Sally Fields. It should be a wake-up call for your daughters and your granddaughters. In fact, her story is infinitesimal to my mother's. She was only there for a few years, my mother for 35 years. In fact, the majority of killings in Jordan or in our area is honor killing, the killing of women. Over 50% of murder cases are killing women in an honor killing. Let me tell you what kind of a great nation you have. My nation, my country, has become the night of the living dead. Because after the Oslo Peace Accords, my friends, Now, people can get killed in Ramallah with their intestines and their insides and their bowels and their hearts and their kidneys being shown in a board as men of Ramallah stand up and carry these body parts because these people were supposedly traitors to the cause. Let me tell you what happens to Christians if they change their mind and go back home. If I go back to Ramallah, I would be gutted out, hung upside down, beheaded, decapitated. This is why I never wondered. I knew exactly what I've seen when I looked at the book of Revelation and I saw the martyrs who were beheaded in the name of Jesus. And I remember in 1993 when I first became a believer, walked into the churches and started talking about these things that I read in the Bible. I said, look, they're going to blow up your buildings. They're going to cut your heads off. I was quickly escorted out of the Sunday school class. Waleed, we do address the cults here. We talk about Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses and such. But we don't know nothing about this Islam you're talking about. I said, you have no clue what's coming upon you. Let me tell you, Islam is in the Bible, been predicted long ago. The ones who will come to kill you will be thinking they are doing God a service. It is very clear in the Bible. And let me tell you what happens to Muslims who accept Christ. What happens to us and how we live our lives here in America, living a life of a paranoid person. Going to a hotel, I wonder about the person who's behind the terminal. Am I going to give him my driver's license with my home address? I just came on the plane and the guy who announced to come inside the plane was a Palestinian. Of course, I'm paranoid all the time. The guys sitting in front of me in the plane were Arabs and I'm paranoid. Because the punishment of a Muslim who becomes a Christian is death. This is very clear from the hadith, as Prophet Muhammad said. Whoever changes his faith, kill him. We don't have allegoric interpretation in Islam. It is all literal. As for the ones who do mischief in that land, let me tell you the verse before that verse. There's a verse in the Quran that says, as for whoever kills a life is as he killed the whole world. That's a beautiful verse, isn't it? And whoever saves a life is as he saved the whole world. Another beautiful verse. And the verse that comes right after, but as for the ones who do mischief in that land, then cut their hands and their feet from opposite sides and crucify them. There's your peaceful verses. Yes, the Quran has peace. But there's a cyanide. Islam is a peaceful religion? Sure, I can find you hundreds of verses that are peaceful. But all what it takes is this cyanide. The cyanide that says, kill Christians and Jews. Kill people who change their faith from Islam. That's the cyanide. We have to understand that Satan gives you good food. He gives you a great punch glass of, a punch bowl when he just drops a couple drops in there. You need to be aware. This is why the Bible tells us to be as wise as serpents and as innocent as doves. Have we thought about this verse? Be as wise as serpents and as innocent as doves. I'm still working in my innocence. I still have a habit of smoking cigarettes. And all my Christian friends condemn me to hell. They say, you smoke. How could you be a Christian? Your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. I says, fine, if my body is a temple, they burn incense in the temple of the Ancients of Days. And God said it was a sweet aroma to my nostrils. Until I ran into Zola Levitt Ministries in the TV, and before the TV show, I told him that joke, and he said to me, but Waleed, one time they burned the wrong incense, and God struck him dead. He got me there. At an early age, I remember when I was in Jericho. In Jericho, the Six-Day War erupted. And my mother was there when the American embassy came to rescue her. They couldn't do nothing about it. So she had to endure the Six-Day War. Prior to the Six-Day War, I remember going to kindergarten, talking about a school education. You guys complain about your school education? Let me tell you about our school education. I went to school every day singing Arabs, our beloved, and Jews, our dogs. Al-Arab ihbabna wal-Yahud klabna. I didn't know what a Jew was. I considered myself Jordanian. Remember, we saluted King Hussein. We had no problem with the kingdom of the Hashemite kingdom of Jordan. My father was a school teacher. The war erupted. Everybody wanted to throw the Jews into the sea. I was there and I witnessed the Six-Day War with my own eyes. We all clamored behind Jamal Abdel Nasser, calling for the destruction of all Jews wherever you find them. We had no problems with Jamal Abdel Nasser running Gaza or owning Gaza. We had no problems with King Hussein owning Judea, because to us that was Arab land and King Hussein was an Arab. The Palestinian Charter, my friends, did not have that land called Judea in the Palestinian Charter. There was never a demand by the Palestinians to have that land called Judea to be part of Palestine. That doesn't exist. It never existed. It only became to pass after the Jews had that land. When the Jews had that land, it is only then the Palestinians, who call themselves Palestinians, insisted to change the edict to say, this land is part of Palestine as well. But why never in the eons of time have we ever looked for a Palestinian state only when the Jews had that land? And most students at the universities don't even know these very basic principles. That's why we have to go to the universities. The war erupted. And I remember how Israel was victorious and righteous. Israel won the battle in 6 days only. And on the seventh day, a rabbi by the name of Goren blew the shofar on the Wailing Wall, declaring Jerusalem the eternal city for the Jewish people. My mother was very joyful. My father looked at her and says, "Why are you so happy?" She says, "Well, when I was a Christian, we learned in the Bible that this will be fulfilled." Because Joshua had a 6-day war as well. Because if you look at the very text in the Joshuan conquest, it is very clear. It says, on the seventh day, early in the morning. The seventh day has not even begun. They went around the walls of Jericho 7 times and they blew the shofars, and Israel was victorious and the state of Israel was established. The state of Israel was ordained in the Bible itself. It was a 6-day war. And almost everybody here has witnessed, have lived during those times of the 6-day war, have seen God's miraculous hand. 6 day, how many days did we have to fight Iraq? And we're still having trouble with insurgents. And Israel won against 5 armies. Well-equipped armies, 1,000 to 100. An amazing story that baffles the mind. In fact, it was in Psalm 83 that in 1993 I started reading the Bible for the first time. And I found in Psalm 83 how God predicted this, how King David wrote this from the eons of time. "Come," they have said, "let us cut Israel off from becoming a nation, from being a nation, from being born as a nation, that the name of Israel be remembered no more. For they form a confederacy against you." A confederacy of nations? "The tents of Edom and the Ishmaelites." Who are these people? But the Jordanians and the Arabs. Hagarites. "And the people of Tyre as well. The tyrants, the Lebanese. Assyria also came to the aid of the children of Lot." Who is Assyria but Iraq and Syria? Right there it says, "Let them be dismayed. Pursue them with your tempest and frighten them with thy storm." That God will use fear among the Muslims and the Arabs to frighten them. And indeed, that's what I saw with my very own eyes. I saw how the Arab army ran all over the place. In Egypt, in the Sinai, they ran, took their boots off, and the Israelis didn't know what to do with so many boots in the desert. In fact, the Israeli Air Force was so confused, they couldn't even tell the fleeing tanks from the tanks that were following the Egyptian tanks. And they started shooting their own tanks by accident, friendly fire. The Jordanian soldiers would take their uniforms off and run with their underwears so they don't see this vicious Jews who are going to kill them. Everybody ran in fear, including our neighbors. "Where are the neighbors going, Dad?" Me and my brother had a heyday because we were going into houses that were empty, sitting on tables with silverware, drinking the refrigerator clean. "What do they have? Let's see." I mean, it was incredible. I couldn't believe it. We were having a heyday. Going into the stores. There's no store owners. Take whatever you want. Pop, food, whatever. Everything was empty. People were running and flocking to the Jordan River, running away from these Jews. And before a bullet was fired, all these people were running away. My father stayed there because he remembered in the 48 the same thing happened and nothing happened after that. He knew back in his mind that these Jews are not going to kill and rape and pillage. And they came to our house. Did they rape my mother or my sister? Oh, what I learned was that my first Hebrew word, shalom. Shalom. Father, I thought we won the battle. The radio station says we've cleansed Jerusalem from all Jews. He says, sorry, son, I guess we've been tuning into the wrong radio station. This is what happens when you tune in the wrong wave, the wrong wavelength. You have to dial God's number. And God's number is the Bible. And I didn't dial it. I never understood what the Bible was about. Of course, my mother couldn't tell me what the Bible was about. She had to remain silent. Have you ever seen Life is Beautiful and seen how the father is trying to show his son all the time something different? And he's trying to... That's what the relationship of my mother with me for 20-some years, trying to show me the truth without saying a single word. Without giving her testimony to me. Because she became a Christian and was secretly baptized in the YMCA hotel in Jerusalem. It was that Texan missionary who came and saw this lonely American woman in this village. He says, what are you doing here? He says, I'm here against my will. Or at least we can baptize you. So they went to the Jerusalem YMCA and the guy says, this is a men's club, sir. You can't bring a woman here. He said, let me remind you, it's Young Men's Christian Association. And 20 years later, I've checked that missionary. I went to visit him in Texas. He was shocked. I said, I came to tell you that I also became a Christian thanks to you. It's good to give the man encouragement. So there she was. She couldn't do much because I learned in my education system things that she couldn't deal with. Because when I went to school, even in the third and fourth grade, which were Christian schools, my friends, the Anglican Lutheran school. If you ever hear the term Palestinian Christian, watch out. Don't trust them. They are wolves in sheep's clothing. And I can tell you all the names of these organizations. They come to take your money and they come to tell you that Israel doesn't count anymore. They have that same poster out there that replacement theology is good. And let me tell you what I learned in third and fourth grade in a Christian school. I was the only Muslim. I walked in the Bible education and I said, I'd like to be included in this. But you're a Muslim. I said, well, so what? I want to learn the Bible. And I learned there that Moses was a Palestinian revolutionist. Jesus was a Palestinian revolutionist. Abraham was a Palestinian revolutionist. You don't have to believe me, but you must believe Faisal Husseini, Hanan Ashrawi, Yasser Arafat before he croaked because he said the same things. All of them said that these great patriarchs were Palestinian revolutionists. In fact, you can see almost every single Palestinian Christian website where they depict Jesus as on the cross with barbed wires around him, and around him is the refugee problem. The refugees, camps, because Jesus supposedly came as a liberator to liberate the refugees from these evil Zionists. That was my Christian education, my friend. Have that be tolerated in a curriculum here in America and see what happens. I learned Nazism of the worst kind when I went to the Muslim school. When I went to the government school, I remember my educators, Sheikh Naeem Ayyad and Sheikh Zakaria. These were graduates of Al-Azhar University of Egypt. Al-Azhar University is the number one university par excellence in the Sunni Muslim world. They educate and graduate all the clergy all throughout the Middle East. And there, I remember Mr. Ayyad teaching us what is called Islamic eschatology. Let me tell you, Satan has eschatology as well. And there we learned, لا تقوم الساعة حتى تغلب طائفة من المسلمين طائفة من اليهود قيل أين يا رسول الله قال في بيت المقدس وأكناف بيت المقدس. No, I'm not speaking in tongues. I'm not charismatic even. The day of judgment shall not come to pass, is what the hadith says, until the tribes of Islam defeat the tribes of Israel in Jerusalem and in the surrounding nations. And then the trees will cry out, and the stones will cry out, there is a Jew hiding behind me. Come, O Muslim, come, O slave of Allah, come and kill him, till not one Jew is left alive, not one male Jew, that is. That was the eschatology. So that was, Israel came back and the Jews came back to that land was a fulfillment of Islamic prophecy as well. What do we do with a woman, Mr. Ayyad? He said, we take them as concubines. Wow. Concubines, I don't understand. You said we can have children with concubines. How can we have children with these concubines if we are not married to them? He said, it's not marriage. I said, what is it then? He said, it's concubinage. I said, I don't get it. You said you have kids with concubinage. It's not adultery? He says, no, it's not adultery. Boy, is it consensual? He says, it doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be. By Allah. And I'm reminded of the book of Zechariah, chapter 12 and chapter 14, where he says, in 1993, I read these things, where it says that he will make Jerusalem a trembling cup to all surrounding nations, and the houses will be rifled, and the women ravished. We were being prepared, and rest assured, it will come to pass. We were being prepared to become the future rapists of Jewish women in that land. That's why they're trying to come closer and closer to Jerusalem. This is why they want to get rid of Judea from Jews. And we're talking about 1.7% of that land. 1.7% of the land of Judea has Jews living in it. That's the problem. Why is that such a problem? You got Indian reservations. The beauty of a nation is how they treat the minorities, and they want to make a Palestinian state just to get rid of 1.7% of these lands that Jews live in there, even though 1.2 million Arabs live in Israel proper. And let me tell you, the 1.2 million Arabs who live in Israel proper could take their Muslim rugs and they could worship Muslim style in all freedom and nobody will touch them. But if you don't believe in what I'm talking about, then why don't you stand up in a Ramallah bus stop and try to reach to your pocket after you give a whistle or two and put it on your head and see what happens to you. What happens to Jews who are got caught in the streets of Ramallah or Nablus or Bethlehem is something that comes out of a horror film. They will cut you apart to pieces. They will gut you out. If you want to try this litmus test, try it in Gaza and see how many seconds you live. This is how we lived. And I remember my first attempted lynching. Because of course I learned in school that in order to go to heaven, that I must sacrifice my own life. There is no redemption but by my own self. So by myself dying, in accordance to the Shahada or martyrdom, I will enter into paradise. And I will have not 72 virgins, but 72 castles. And on each castle, 72 sheets. And on each sheet, 72 virgins. 72 times 72 times 72 worth of virgins in heaven. When something doesn't exist, folks, you can give it profusely to the masses. In fact, you might not believe me, even so-called peaceful Muslims in America says, hey, that's ridiculous. And Al-Azhar University reprimanded them and issued a fatwa and an edict affirming that the virgins in heaven for the martyrs is true. In fact, they issued another edict that says, wait a minute, suicide is prohibited in Islam, but it's permissible in one occasion only, and that is when you kill only Jews. When you kill Jews, suicide martyrdom is okay. In fact, we learned the Quran very well. We were taught it in schools. وَلَا تَحْسَبَنَّ الَّذِينَ قُتِلُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَمْوَاتٌ بَلْ أَحْيَاءٌ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ يُرْزَقُونَ Do not think that the ones who die in the cause of Allah are dead, but are living with Allah, receiving His blessings. Those virgins in heaven, so on and so forth. What did you expect me to be? If I compare to you what's happening in the Middle East, I can compare it only to Nazi Germany. And even Nazi Germany doesn't even come close to comparison to what is happening in the Middle East. Because Nazi Germany is only one country. In the Middle East, we have many countries who are Nazi Germany. You have potentially a problem of 55 Nazi Germanys rising to power. What are you going to do then? We learned the Umar Declaration, very clear. And most Americans don't realize that when the Jews used to put the Star of David, the yellow Star of David in Germany, would think that this came out of Nazism. Wrong. It came out of Islamic fundamentalism, my friends. Because the Umar Declaration, and Umar ibn al-Khattab, he was the second caliphate of the Islamic world. He was one of the disciples of Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam. And he clearly said that Jews must wear a yellow patch on their right shoulder, just like Nazi Germany. Jews must walk the narrow alleyways, just like Nazi Germany. Jews must never be judges over a Muslim court, just like Nazi Germany. Jews must never enter into Muslim bathhouses, just like in Nazi Germany. Jews couldn't enter into German restaurants. Jews must never have a Muslim slave, just like Nazi Germany. You can have a German servant. Jews must pay double the taxation in Nazi Germany. And the same thing, Jews must pay what is called jizya, which is a taxation that you have to pay for protection from Muslims. حَتَّى يَدْفَعُ الْجِزْيَةَ عَنْ يَدٍ وَهُمْ صَاغِرُونَ in the Quran, that they pay the jizya by an upper hand, may the Jews be subjugated and belittled. Some of you might want to argue, this was just written in paper. And let me remind you, this was carried out during the golden age of Islam. Harun al-Rashid, who's flouted in universities as a golden age of Islam, carried out these edicts verbatim on the Jews. Al-Khalifa al-Mutawakkil as well carried out these edicts against the Jews throughout the Islamic Empire. Jews have always been living in ghettos in North Africa, that the Jews must live in ghettos just as in Nazi Germany. The Jews have suffered, not just in Europe, my friends. They've been suffering in the Muslim world from the beginning of the founding father of Islam, Muhammad. Banu Nadir, Banu Qurayda, Banu Qaynuqa were all massacred and exiled from that land. In fact, their women were given as concubines and their rights consummated on the same day they killed their brothers and their fathers and their children. And if a male boy had pubic hair, he was beheaded that same day. Let me tell you of the history of Islam that you don't even know. Islam, my friends, is not a peaceful religion. Islam is the most violent religion that came on the face of the earth. In fact, the Bible clearly says, and the angel of the bottomless pit, which was called what? Abaddon. And in the Greek tongue called Apollyon, which means what? Destruction. Tell me what is happening around you these days. Is it not terrorism or destruction? Indeed, it was only through the Bible in 1993 when I started seeing the truth. But before I saw the truth, I had to enter into hell to realize I almost lost my own life as my cousin did Ra'id on his way to Ben Yehuda Street. My mission, of course, was to put a bomb in Bank Laomi Israel in Bethlehem right next to the Nativity Church. Of course, I stoned Jews from the Temple Mount down at the Wailing Wall. I hated Jews with all my passion, even though I asked myself all the time, why do I hate Jews? I cannot find an answer. It seems that I simply hated Jews because they told me to. I hated Jews because my religion told me to. Just like Nazism, my friends, the process of robbing the school children, the process of robbing the media, the process of robbing the arts, the process of robbing the social life, the songs, everything in our culture was anti-Semitic, just like in Nazism. I didn't know that it was a drug that was being fed to the children. I began to understand in 1993 that it was not the issue of the occupation that was the problem, but the occupation of the minds of these young children. That's what the problem was, and my mind was filled with hatred. That I seek martyrdom in order to go to heaven, of course, enticed by these wide-eyed virgins and all these things. So after I stoned the Jews and got into every single riot I could find, starting the riots in my village, doing graffiti all over the place, I decided to go for the gutso to go plant a bomb after I was in prison. I rendezvoused with a man by the name of Mahmoud al-Mughrabi. And of course, his last name was al-Mughrabi, means he's from al-Maghrib or Morocco. All the Palestinians knew their heritage. We were from Jordan. If somebody's last name is Paulus, they're Greeks. If somebody's last name is Ashrawi, they're Egyptian. If somebody's last name is Qumsiyya, they're Egyptian. We all knew the clans and where our heritage is. We all knew our backgrounds. But as soon as we were in front of the media, our background simply changed to become the original Canaanites. In fact, you don't have to believe me. You can watch footage of Yasser Arafat before he croaked. He was saying that we were the original Canaanites. How could we be the original Canaanites if we consider ourselves Arabs of a Semitic origin and be Semites and Hamites at the same time? That goes back all the way to Noah. Yet there is not a single person. Did you ever hear Cristiano Manpur objecting to Yasser Arafat when he was saying these things? Excuse me, how could you be Hamite and a Semite at the same time? Just like Nazi Germany, myth is being taught as fact throughout the whole land of the Middle East, and people are buying it. It was only through the Bible that I learned of the Semites and the Hamites and all these things. These details in the Bible were very important. My mother, when I was young, would take me to archaeological artifacts in the museum just to make me see these things. I remember seeing the scroll of Isaiah. I was very interested in archaeology. I wondered why the scroll of Isaiah was written in Hebrew, especially when we sang the song, "The Land Speaks Arabic." Al-Ard Tatkallam Arabi was a national song. Listen, the land seems to be speaking Hebrew. What's going on here? Why is it in Hebrew? Ah, it was a Zionist conspiracy. Must have been. Everything was a Zionist conspiracy because the Jews spread mad cow disease. The Jews put infertility drugs for the Palestinians. The Jews do everything that's abominable under the face of the earth. Even the Holocaust to us was taught as a fabrication. And you can see all the Palestinian leaders pronouncing to their masses that the Holocaust itself was a fabrication. Muhammad, what do you think? We're eating popcorn, watching the Yom HaShoah, where Israel would show the Holocaust for 7 days in a row, and we would be laughing. Look, Muhammad, they got this guy here so scrawny. What kind of a diet plan was he on? He has no shame to walk naked. Look at them. Man, a flock of them walking naked. They're piled up on top of each other naked. The Jews have no shame. They will take their clothes off, pile up naked, act like they were shot in the head, just to create this palace, this Jewish state. You don't have to believe me, but you can see all these leaders. There isn't a single Arab leader who would admit that the Holocaust was true. Indeed, we live in a crazy world where Yasser Arafat got the Nobel Peace Prize. Could you imagine Osama bin Laden winning the Nobel Peace Prize? Maybe he should be nominated next. You know what? He qualifies. Can you tell me he doesn't qualify? He wants the whole world to have peace through Islam. Because the whole world, in his view, will never reach peace until everybody is Islamized. Muhammad himself says, I've been ordered to fight the peoples until everyone says there is no God but Allah and Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. It is very clear. And it was in 1993 when my wife started challenging me after years of being an advocate for terrorism here in America. And let me tell you what we did in America. In Chicago, we used to get recruiting. And it wasn't just the PLO. I wasn't advocate for just for the PLO, but for the Islamic Brotherhood. Where Mr. Jamal Saeed, who's still free in Illinois, still free, collecting funds to send it to terrorists and Islamic jihadists on the open. He was a colleague of Mustafa Azzam. Everybody, I urge you to check the name Azzam. A-Z-Z-A-M. Look it up. He was the one who started the jihad movement in Afghanistan, Peshawar. It was through him that America started supporting the Mujahideen to fight communism. And naive America supported the Mujahideen with Stinger missiles. And they won against the communists. And guess what that did? That gave birth to the confidence that the Islamists needed all these years, that now we could defeat communist Russia, it is very easy to also defeat America, the great Satan. That's what started the whole problem. And it's the same problem with giving land in Israel, because the land that they're giving in Gaza is a Hamas area. If Gaza is given, Hamas says, see, we got Gaza as number one. It was via Islam, and Allah is the one who gave us this victory, and we got Gaza back. You guys couldn't get anything else back. So it was Hamas, the leader in that community, that's going to give birth to Islamic fundamentalism in that area. But the Americans don't understand how Islam works. So now you've given confidence to the Islamists. And it was unintentional. And it was Abdullah Azzam. He'd come to Chicago, to America, and give teaching and all these things. Abdullah Azzam, my friends, was the mentor of Osama bin Laden. Abdullah Azzam, my friends, was also from Jenin, Palestine. Most Americans don't know that it was a Palestinian who gave the birth of this thing called Al-Qaeda a long time ago. But nobody wants to talk about that, because now, supposedly, the Palestinians are supposed to be bringing peace to that region. I remember my songs when I was a teenager. All my songs were infected with hatred. All our Palestinian national songs had the words kill, bomb, shoot, maim, you name it. Our poetry, beheading and decapitation, was all over the poetry. It was nothing. Flinging hands and flying hands and limbs was part of the poetry. That's a song we used to sing, national song. Sharpen my bones and sharpen them and make them swords. Convert my body into a Molotov cocktail. Think about that one. Ya gatilin damkum halali alayna. Wayna antifirru min igabna wayna. O Jews, O killers, your blood is kosher to us. Halal. You've seen halal markets lately? Where will you hide from us in that day? Which day? The day that Muhammad talked about. That the Arabs and the Muslims will surround Jerusalem. All these songs. أنا جاي في كلام الموت. I come in the name of death. I come in the name of death. Why is one of the names of Allah is the one who causes death? Or the one who causes destruction? One of the names of Allah in the Quran is the destroyer. Did you know that one? He is called Maliki Rabbil Alameen. The angel of the two worlds. The heavenly and the under earth, under the ground. Think who is Allah when you start understanding what Islam is about. And you can only understand what Islam is about only when you understand the Bible. You could never understand Islam as a secular person. You could never understand Islam without the guidance of the Word of God. Never. And it was in 1993. Of course, I tried to convert my wife from Catholicism to Islam. She was a Catholic. Lately, we both got baptized together. Because she herself didn't understand the Bible. I taught my wife the Bible, and the world accused her of converting me to Christianity. And her family hated her because she became a Christian. And my family hated her because they thought she converted me. And her family hated me because they thought I converted her. It's a whole mess. She said, where are the corruptions? I said, well, they're there. She says, show me where. Okay, I'll show you. So I went and bought one. Best $10 I ever spent. And that's the original one, by the way. And I wore it out. Literally, wore it out from cover to cover. I remember praying to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, if you're really out there, I want your will for my life. Show me the truth. I want to see the truth. That's it. And at that time, I thought he was going to show me that the Quran is better than the Bible. I had parallel studied both the Quran with the Bible. I said, well, I'm going to see the truth in the Quran, and I'm going to see the corruptions in the Bible. And I started comparing the two together. David in the Bible, the prophet Nathan comes to him, and he says, David, what do you think of a man who stole another man's wife, murdered her husband? That man should be killed. Nathan said, David, thou art that man. And there was repentance in the land of Israel. I said, boy, this Bible is like a mirror. Even if the prophet himself, even if the king himself, God will punish him. Where in the Quran, Muhammad, when he wanted to marry his adopted son Zayd's wife, the wind blew her thigh and he saw her thigh. And he felt bad about it. But the angel Gabriel told him, why do you conceal what Allah put in your heart? And as Zayd finished the proceeds of formalities of divorce, Allah have given her to thee. So this way there'd be no problem with men marrying their adopted sons' wives, the daughter-in-laws. So he took her to his bed. Boy, the angel of love. They can give me anything I want. What's similar between all cults, my friends, is two things. Power and women. Look at Mormonism, the same thing. It's power and women. Muhammad went to a secluded area called Ghar Hira. The prophet Joseph Smith went to a secluded area seeking whatever. He saw an angel of light. He told him there's a book that has a replica in heaven made of tablets of stones. He told Joseph Smith there's a book has a replica of different metals that's in heaven. He told him that polygamy is okay. The holy places got directed now, become Salt Lake City. The holy places got directed to become Mecca. And everything is exactly the same stuff. Even though they didn't speak the same language. And I was shocked because at that time I was doing my research, Mormon missionaries would come to my home. Of course, Satan was sending his missionaries. And I remember when he showed me a video of Joseph Smith's eyes going like this. I said, this is exactly what Muhammad had. The fits. The possession. This is exactly the same thing. How did that happen? I started learning very quickly that Satan appears as an angel of light. Wow, when I saw an angel of light one time in Bethlehem myself, me and my friend. How did it happen? Because I was trying to revive the dead. I was talking to the dead. And what happened is we saw an angel of light, both of us. We were pinned down to the ground. And I'm not a person who believes in, you know, signs and wonders. Believe me, I'm not even charismatic. I'm a skeptic. I'm a doubting Thomas par excellence, number one. And I tell you, what happened to us, I mean, it was amazing, scary, terrifying. How does the Bible know that demons come as angels of light? Because that was a demon that I saw in Bethlehem. Wonder what? I started realizing for the first time. Then I started running into prophecy. And I spent a year investigating these whole issues. And I started seeing God's hand. He had a plan for mankind. He had a roadmap for the whole world. It was God's roadmap and man's roadmap. And they both are opposite each other. I remember that was in 1993, the Oslo Peace Accord. I remember my mother told me when I was a kid, I said, Mom, does your Bible say that we will have a Palestinian state? Because I caught my mother studying the Bible once as I was stealing her cigarettes. She smoked menthols. And she didn't see me stealing the cigarettes. That's what I thought. And finally I saw the Bible. I said, Mom, what are you with the Bible? I'm going to tell my father. You know what that would have meant? That would have meant her death. She said, if you tell your father about me reading the Bible, I'm going to tell him about you smoking cigarettes. I said, I don't smoke cigarettes. She said, what do you think you've been doing all these nights? You think I didn't see you? So we had a deal. And I still have the problem. Sorry, that busts your bubble. And then she told me, I said, Mom, does the Bible say that you will have a Palestinian state? She said, yes. Where? Joel. She said, the land will be divided. That God will come down, I'll judge the nations for dividing their land. And that was the Oslo Peace Accord. And I started looking into the Psalms 83, I just discussed with you. And I looked in Jeremiah, the day is coming, saith the Lord, that no longer the children of Israel will say, the God who's brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, that's nothing. But God who's brought the children of Israel out of all the lands where he has driven them. All the lands. Many, many countries. If Moses was here today, he will be dancing in joy. He had a rough time getting them out of the land of Egypt. One country. But getting them out of 100 different countries in front of all your eyes is a much bigger miracle. I started seeing that the Bible speaks for today. That the Bible was not a book in history. That the Bible was not talking about Palestinian revolutionists either. That everything was prophesied about. And I started documenting everything, all my findings, all my research. This is why I call it, why I left jihad. It was 1,000 pages. I had to cut it down to 500. To give all the reasons from the Bible of what I found out about the truth. The Bible had in it 8,000. 352 verses of prophetic nature. 8,352 verses. If you think your enemy comes with a knife or a Kalashnikov, you got a Stinger missile. How can they argue against you with all this data that you have? I started to see even the exchange program between the refugees in Jeremiah, where it says, I will pluck the children of Judah out of their land, and I will pluck them out of that land, and I will exchange them. Clearly what it says in Jeremiah. 850,000 Jews have left that land of North Africa, Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, all these countries, forced to go to Israel. Nobody talks about the greatest refugee problem in history. Israel, my friends, is the world's greatest refugee problem. Not the Palestinians. We stole all their arguments and applied it to us. This is why you used to see Yasser Arafat, who used to say, we have a great Holocaust. We have massacres in Jenin. When Israel clearly popped a zit in the middle of Jenin, called some bomb-making factories, and if they took an aerial picture of Jenin, it was fully intact. That's the true situation. We stole their arguments. And then you have the destruction of Joseph's tomb, which then Israel was promised by the Palestinians that they will protect all Jewish holy places. And I urge you to read Psalm 74, which talks about not the destruction of the temple only, but the destruction of those synagogues as well. The places of the worship, the synagogues are burnt in that land. They take hammers and chisels and the pride of stones. That wasn't just the temple. Look at Joseph's tomb and what happened in Joseph's tomb. Remember what they did. Look at the footage when they burned the place, painted it green. Can you imagine if the Jews, for a change, believed the Muslims that Abraham built Al-Kaaba? Because Muslims believe that Abraham built Al-Kaaba. Could you imagine if the Jews believed that and decided to go to Mecca and say, you know what? We decided to paint this thing blue and put a big Star of David in the middle. And you know what? Muslims are not allowed to worship in Kaaba no more. Only Jews can worship in it. And maybe put the high priest, Kohanim Hagadol, over there to run the show. Can you imagine what would happen? But that is exactly what had happened today, where the Jews have no access to the Temple Mount. And I urge you to look at the Bible where it says God himself will come down and contend for Mount Zion and for its holy hill. And we think this doesn't matter as Christians, that God will spare us just because we're saved. That a formula of salvation carries no weight without any work. We just say we're saved, but we hate Israel. It doesn't matter because we're saved. Let me remind you of Matthew 25, for I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was in prison. You didn't visit me. When were you hungry? When were you in prison? As you did it to the least of these, my brethren, which matches totally Joel chapter 3, where he gathers the nations and judges them. The exact phrase, he gathers the nations, and there he gathers the nations. He judges these for Israel, clear in Joel, and he judges these for my brethren, the Jews, clearly there. And we say it doesn't matter what our position is on Israel. Let me tell you that that guy outside there is in deep doo-doo. When I go to judgment, I will remember amongst my Arabic brethren, I would say, excuse me, there's a lone ranger here. I stood with Israel and the Jewish people. Don't tell me that when the nations gather against Israel and they fight against Israel and the Messiah will redeem Israel and win the battle for them, that it doesn't matter what side you're on. And let me tell you who is the army that comes with Israel and with the Messiah. The army is you, my friends. And I can show you clearly from the Bible where we will be the army that will come with Messiah as we meet him in the clouds. And we will fight for Zion and for its hill. Don't tell me that doesn't matter. Our ways and God's ways are different. We must think about that. I began to understand very clearly that Churchill was right the whole time. Churchill said that we've been given a choice between shame and between war. That is, giving land for an enemy like Hitler. Giving land is not going to bring peace, Churchill said. He was right. He said that in the parliament, and Lady Astor told him, I hate you very much. He was hated for speaking the truth, yes. And you will be hated for speaking the truth. Lady Astor told him, if I was your wife, I would put poison in your tea. And he said to her, if I was your husband, ma'am, I would gladly drink it. But everybody hated Hitler, and he was right. Can one man be right and the whole world be wrong? Noah was right, and the whole world drowned. Think about that one for a change. Moses was right. Abraham was right. And the whole people were wrong. Yes, can you make a difference? Look at Esther. I'm a nobody with an accent. And I've been to England. I can tell you stories galore. Walking into the BBC. Live, God arranged it. He orchestrates things for you. And a panel of three, unfortunately, to put it live. And I said, I explained to you that the situation in the Middle East is exactly as what happened in Nazi Germany. He said, sir, it takes two to tango. I said, are you telling me it took two to tango in Nazi Germany? He says, well, yes. I said, what did the Jews, tell your audience, do in Nazi Germany to tango? He saw that he just swallowed his shoe. So his colleague tried to help him. He says, well, Mr. Shubat, the problem of the world is fundamentalism, with an English accent. Fundamentalists, sir, are the problem. I said, you're right. Us Christian fundamentalists give Jews a headache. We try to proselyze to them all the time. But Muslim fundamentalists will whack that head right off your shoulders. Totally. Well, thank you for stopping at the BBC. I says, okay, I'm on my way out, but I got to take a last look at you three stooges because you guys don't know what the world going on here. You're deceiving all these people. It was just like that. It was very, very embarrassing for them. I've spoken to members of the EU. I've changed the hearts of journalists talking to them. But it wasn't me, and it wasn't my strange accent. It was the Almighty because He chose Moses with a strange accent as well. That guy started worse than I did. But I pray sometimes that he will send me a brother called Aaron. But instead, my brother will call my wife and he says, we know what you're doing against Islam. Don't forget, we know where you live. My wife, for the first time, started to learn and realize what it was like to be in that fold called Christian out of Islam. I said, didn't you know that I've told you these things? She started learning very, very quickly. And let me tell you a one-step program that will solve your marriage problems. Witness. Stand up for the truth. You don't have enough time to lick each other's wounds. Your marriage will be perfect. It will work out. You will have no problems in your marriages. Forget all these programs. They don't work. There's only one program that will work. Get off your feet and fight for the cause. Continue the road and carry your crosses. Thank you very much.